stuff. I'm not sure I deserved it, but you get into a sort of rut. I come here, I've been here every year for 30 years, and you feel you're at home here, and therefore you get a rather more kindly audience than you deserve, I think.
I'm sitting at the Edinburgh Book Festival with the legendary Roy Hattersley, Titan of the British political scene for more than one generation, who is recently the author of a book about the Dukes of Devonshire. And I did go to the event in the main tent, but I couldn't hear anything because the man behind me was talking a lot. He was a former leader of the Liberal Democrats, and he had a running commentary on it. So perhaps you could say what the book is about.
Well, I'll forgive Ming. Ming Campbell is a friend of mine. It's about not just the Dukes of Devonshire. The festival programme talked about a book called The Dukes of Devonshire. It's called The Devonshires. So it's about a lot of Devonshires. It's about a generation after generation of this family, which were always central to the history of Great Britain. Other families, the Russells and the Salisburys, had moments when they were far more important than the Cecils, far more important than the Devonshires. But the Devonshires were always there. They were there from the dissolution of the monasteries right up to the end of Queen Victoria's reign, always important in English history, or British history, because they were very influential in Scottish history too. And it was about that. It was about that.
The a lot of people have always said that it's the job of the Labour Party to represent the people in the halls of power. You seem to have gone one further and are now representing the people of power to the people.
Well, I don't represent the Devonshires. I'm a full-time author. I earn my living by writing books. And I write books about what books can be written about. I mean, I wrote a biography of Nelson. I'm not a sailor. I wrote a biography of the founder of the Salvation Army. I'm not a Salvationist. I wrote a book about John Wesley. I'm not a Methodist. I wrote a book about Lloyd George. God help me, I'm not a liberal. And I'm not an aristocrat, and I'm not on the. I'm in favour of. I said today, I want to pull down the mighty from their seats and exalt the humble and meek. I want a more equal society. I want redistribution. But this is history. This is me being a historian, not me being a politician.
The great lament of many people is that they wish that they had known what they know now when they were younger. You must have come across a lot of historical factoids, a lot of historical perspectives that could have served you in the past. Is there any that you can that spring to mind?
No, I mean, I would, given the chance to do what I've done over again, I do very much the same. I do it a great deal better. I mean, I can describe the mistakes I've made. Well, I say I can. I'm not going to, but I could describe the mistakes I've made. But if I have my time over again, I want to be what I was and what I'm proud to have been. I would want to be a Labour Member of Parliament for an inner-city constituency with a mixed-race population. And I want to go on about more equal society, about redistribution, about taking from the rich and giving to the poor. I want to be doing virtually the same things that I did then, but I would want to do them rather better than I did them in the past.
It must be very interesting, particularly coming up from a Midlands point of view, with such a strong regional identity, to be in Scotland right now and to be experiencing what we're all experiencing, which is this sort of rabid focus on the independence question by what was it Rhodri Morgan said? He said the Tories are in sin, but the nationalists are in error, not in sin. And is that a similar view to yours?
Well, first of all, I don't come from the Midlands. I come from the North. Peak District in the North. And you can invent all sorts of reasons for nationalism. I mean, we in Yorkshire, I don't live in Yorkshire, I live 5 miles outside Yorkshire, but we in Yorkshire won more Olympic medals than Australia, and so we're inclined to say, why not us? But I understand the feelings of Scottish nationalism. I don't support the idea of separation, but I understand the way in which Scots men and women think of themselves as a nation. They are a nation with an independent culture, an independent history, and an independent identity. I think that identity is best expressed within the United Kingdom, but I understand the feeling that Scotland doesn't want to be suppressed and absorbed into some amorphous unit which is not representative of them. And I think we can have a system in which there is the United Kingdom, Scotland a part of it, but Scotland's identity properly preserved.
How dangerous would it be for the Labour political landscape for separation. I mean, you think of the number of MPs in Wat Tam Diel, who you several times referred to in glowing terms in your speech, described as the West Lothian question. I mean, has the West Lothian question now reached a breaking point?
Well, there is a problem. I mean, Tam was, in a sense, a visionary in that he explained the West Lothian question in a way and at a time when people didn't really understand it. There is a problem of Scottish MPs with devolved powers and health, education and so on, voting for how education and health is determined in England. But I think that can be overcome if we give more power to an English individual authority. But I have no doubt at all that there can be a resolution to the problem if we want to cooperate, as I think we do, to make the best of what can be a varied relationship. There are some things which ought to be done United Kingdom-wise, some things ought to be done national-wise, and I think we can work that out. Involved, I think, after the devolution debate, after the separation debate, after the separation vote, and a new settlement. I'm assuming, and I think most people are assuming, that the vote will go in favour of unity. The vote won't be separation. If that happens, it's important for Britain not to say, well, we won. England has remained part of the United Kingdom, so is Scotland. It is still a British solution. But to talk about how Scotland evolves within the United Kingdom, and that may mean more power for Scotland than they have now.
Would Labour still be in government in Holyrood if figures, you think particularly of Robin Cook, Alistair Darling, even Gordon Brown, had migrated north after the death of Donald Dewar?
I think the great thing that Donald Dewar had, Donald was a very close friend of mine, and so I'm rather biased in making judgments about him, but I think the great thing he had was the demonstration that Scotland was more important to him than Westminster. And there's a feeling in Scotland, which I understand, that people regard Scotland as a stepping stone to Westminster. And that very many important figures have said, well, Scotland is how we get national United Kingdom prominence. And Donald came back home. And I think other people would have done that too. Had we remained in power, had Donald not died, it would have been a different situation. I think it's very important for some politicians to say Scotland is what matters to us, not as a stepping stone to Westminster, but Scotland itself. And I think there are now politicians about who will say that.
The most momentous sort of shift in political colours that you've done in recent years is from green to red. You're now on the benches of the Lords, and there is a real concern in the country that the Lords is now the great white elephant in the room that's not been reformed. Now clearly, there's nobody who could argue that not having the expertise and insight that former cabinet ministers such as yourself can provide. My father once made me sit and watch you giving a speech in the Lords on the basis of, now listen to everybody else, aren't they rubbish? But but isn't this the swamp that's in need of draining?
Well, you say there's nobody who won't argue that the House of Lords isn't full of expertise. Well, it is full of expertise, but it's not expertise that makes any difference. I mean, the House of Lords is an anachronism. The House of Lords needs not to be reformed but abolished. The theory about the House of Lords is it's full of clever people, which it is. The House of Lords membership is far more distinguished than membership of the House of Commons, but it doesn't add up to a row of beans. Friends of mine make speeches, doctors, lawyers, philosophers, brilliant little speeches in the House of Lords, which they've worked on for weeks. They address a House which has probably six people in it, and nothing happens. It's recorded in Hansard, but it's not recorded in newspapers. They'd be far better off writing a letter to the Times. I mean, the House of Lords is an anachronism which not only is an anachronism, but doesn't have any of the forces an anachronism might have. The argument in favour of the House of Lords is that they have experts, but they have experts who don't count for anything, experts who have no power, no thrust, no push. And my own view of the House of Lords is not mend it, but end it. I go to the House of Lords to vote the things I believe in, but I'm very happy to see the House of Lords abolished.
Well, there aren't many people in the current economic climate who would do themselves out of a job quite so deliberately. I suppose we should finish this interview with a question of what must be your greatest work, which is the diaries of a rescue dog brought into your household. Now, I recently, the wife and I, we recently had a rescue dog come into our house, and this has been an essential manual for us. So I should really end this with a question mark at the end, which is, when is the diaries coming up to Edinburgh as a fringe show? And will you be starring?
Well, Butler's Diaries is a rather shameful thing. I've written 22 books, and the only one which has been an all-time bestseller, worldwide bestseller, still selling here today at the festival, that was written 15 years ago, is a diary which has a dog's name on it, Butler's Diaries. And it was written uniquely, I think, out of love. Most books are written out of careful calculation, intellectual calculation, financial calculation, commercial calculation, but that was written because I wanted to do something in praise of my dog. Buster's dead, he's been dead 3 years, worst day of my life when it happened. But Buster's Diary is, I hope, a testament to the absolute joy of having a dog. When I left the House of Commons, the Daily Telegraph said to me, "What are your great regrets?" Expecting me to say, "Well, I never led my party, never held one of the great offices of state," and I replied perfectly honestly, "Not having had a dog for 10 years, and I've remedied that, and there we are.
I know what that day feels like, I really do, and I think it will be such a great show to see at the Fringe. And we like to end these interviews on a more positive note. I don't know whether you're seeing anything at the Fringe this year, but we do like to ask our interviewees if they, once they've finished reading the book that the author is plugging, what should they pick up next?
Well, first of all, I have seen something in the Fringe this year. I saw Debbie Copperfield last night, which was extremely good. I saw a show which was Broadway musicals from a French perspective, which was even better. So we've had two good Fringe experiences. The next book is a book called The Catholics, because my book on the Devonshires is really a story of suppression of Catholicism. They were the great Protestant family in England, squeezing Mary, Queen of Scots, out of existence, squeezing her successors out of existence, fighting against what they call papism. And it suddenly struck me, well, what happened to the papists when the Devonshires were giving such a hard time? So I'm going to write about persecuted Catholics in the next 3 years.
Roy Hassley, honestly, it's been such an honour. Thank you very much for speaking with Fringe Review.